But good people must also be humble people. Proud persons are no match for the devil. The best remedy for pride is the practice of humble prayer. Although I would add, pray not just in general, pray in particular. Prayer already is an act of humility which obtains graces from God. However, what we should ask of God is the right to know beforehand what persons, what places, what reading, what entertainment, even what conversation can be used by the devil to lead us into sins against the sixth and ninth commandments of God. Our second principle in dealing with an evil spirit is the fact that he is never allowed to tempt us beyond our strength. But let's be clear. What do we mean? We mean that we always have enough grace to overcome the devil. If I stop there, I will not be telling you the truth. We touched on this before, but let me be even more clear. Is it true that we always have enough grace to overcome the devil? Period. Absolutely no. We always have enough grace to overcome the demon of unchastity, provided we have prayed. I cannot too strongly emphasize that when God permits the devil to tempt us, this does not mean that necessarily we already have enough light to recognize the demon or enough strength to resist him. We can never bank on the grace we already have. We must pray for additional light and more strength to identify and resist the evil one when he assaults us. We continue. Daily examine and chastity. This conference would not be complete unless we looked at one form of prayer that I'm afraid most Catholics would hardly associate with the virtue of chastity. This is a daily examination of conscience. If you derived only one benefit from these conferences, to make a daily examination of conscience, your patience and my effort will have been more than adequately rewarded. Call it a daily inventory, or a daily reflection on one's conduct. The examination of conscience is indispensable for the preservation and certainly for developing the virtue of chastity. In practice, this means that I ask myself, if only for a few minutes every day, how I stand before God. This will enable me to know what occasions of sin I should avoid, what I should say, how I should act. The examination of conscience is both reflection on how I've behaved during the day, but also an anticipation of how I should behave the next day. will also keep me alert to temptations. I will learn to see them. What a statement. I will learn to see my temptations as actual graces from God, providing me with the opportunity for growing in what the saints call the angelic virtue. We have stressed how necessary is prayer for keeping and growing in Christian chastity. The daily examine of conscience, and by the way, all the masters of the spiritual life change the spelling of the word. Examination of conscience is commonly referred to preparation for sacramental confession. Examine, E-X-A-M-E-N, examine of conscience refers to the daily inventory about which we are speaking, inventory of the past day and anticipation of the next day. This daily examine of conscience provides us with the opportunity of becoming forearmed with God's grace. We ask the Lord beforehand to give us the light he will need to recognize a temptation against chastity from the world, the flesh, and the devil. We ask him, by anticipation, to give us the strength we will need. He knows what we'll need. We ask him beforehand to resist the temptation that he anticipates better. He knows that it will come. All of this is good Christian strategy if we're going to preserve the one virtue without which no one gets to heaven. Dare we say the temptations against chastity are graces from God? Yes. We know that with God nothing happens. That word is not in the divine vocabulary. Happen or chance. What they call temptations are therefore part of God's mysterious providence. From his divine perspective, the purpose of temptations is to provide us with the opportunity of not only proving our love for him, but growing in his love. Hear it. I hope you hear this again. We need temptations to grow in the love of God. But all of this presumes that we are prepared to profit from the temptations by our daily examine of conscience in the presence of God. One of the factors which increases the merit of our good acts is the real power we put into whatever we are doing that is pleasing to God. And we repeat, we can gain either more or less grace. Same reaction, but more or less meritorious. One of the factors for gaining more merit from our good actions is wherein what we do is more difficult to perform. Temptations, therefore, I repeat, are a gift from God. The very difficulty that temptations present provide us with, I repeat, the blessed opportunity of using our wills more than we would have had to use them were we not tempted. Temptations, therefore, here temptations against chastity, are a providential means of evoking a maximum of willpower in our cooperation with divine grace, and therefore a corresponding maximum of merit. Resisting temptations to unchastity thus becomes a blessing by demanding more effort on our part. We receive an increase in our supernatural life, including our possession of the virtue of chastity. Hear it and don't forget. You're not just to preserve our chastity. Oh no, we are to grow. And temptations are a wonderful, divinely conferred privilege of growing in this angelic virtue. Another question. Does regular examination of conscience also help us to control unchaste thoughts? It certainly does. As the history of the saints so clearly shows, how I like to say this, some of the greatest saints in the church's history had, I'd use the word, virulent passions of lust. To name just two, Bernard and Aloysius. However, we are here speaking of the value of the examination of conscience. Prudence tells us we should not expose ourselves to temptations beyond what God has provided us with a grace to resist. There is such a thing as tempting God. Consequently, there is great value in using the examen of conscience to anticipate, hear it, on how we should think. We are to plant the kind of thoughts we want to have or not have. Plan beforehand on a positive method of controlling our thoughts. Everything in the spiritual life depends on our mind, on our thoughts. Hence, the priceless value of using the examen of conscience to plan by planting the kind of thoughts our minds should have. The reason why it is so important to plan our thinking is that thoughts are much more elusive than actions. The power of our wills over our thoughts is not, as the expression goes, despotic. It is diplomatic. I've got to outwit my fallen human nature by anticipating how I'm going to think. I cannot say to my mind, don't think this. As I would say to my hand, don't touch that. And hope for my mind to make an immediate response. I need to substitute. That means planning. To substitute other thought patterns for the undesirable ones, and thus drive the latter, by anticipation, into subconsciousness. There is no more effective way of growing in chastity than to cultivate the habit of training myself to think chaste thoughts long beforehand through a daily examine of conscience. One last question. How does an examine of conscience help to plan a chaste lifestyle? Through the examine, I foresee what actions can be substituted for the usual ones, with consequently different thoughts evoked in the mind. I may have found that certain reading, perhaps innocuous in itself, brings on a train of thought that causes me trouble with carnal images. The foresight gained by examination, I recommend changes in my reading, in my company keeping, in my conversation pattern. Plan ahead of time. Either you plan or you will become the victim of both your fallen nature and of the evil spirit. We are to have a free will. Well, that free will can be an enslaved will unless I have planned beforehand of how I'm going to think. I can even use my careful examine to plan on what kind of thoughts to substitute for the salacious ones. How I should maintain myself in peace when the body is aroused, and how to divert my attention to what is attractive but harmless, and away from what is sexually attractive but potentially sinful. This single rule, overcome venereal satisfaction with innocent enjoyment, is a talisman of spiritual psychology and has been found effective since the dawn of Christianity. Let me repeat. Overcome venereal satisfaction once it is aroused with innocent enjoyment. In other words, overcome pleasure with pleasure. Seductive, sinful pleasure with wholesome, even holy, satisfaction. All of this, however, presumes that I plan, that I anticipate my days. Saint Ignatius, in preparing his men, he would excuse his fellow Jesuits, if they were not well, maybe in a dying state from all other prayer, but never, never from the examine of conscience. I have one more part to this evening's conference. Some maxims of the saints. The writings of the spiritual masters are filled with wise directives on how chastity is the fruit of God's grace through the practice of humble prayer. Alphonsus Liguori recommends, I quote, "When an evil thought is presented to the mind, it must immediately turn our thoughts to God. But the first rule is, instantly invoke the names of Jesus and Mary, and continue to invoke them until the temptation ceases." Unquote, Alphonsus Liguori. Again, Charles de Foucault. He goes to the extreme of crediting God almost exclusively with a precious gift of continence. He is here praying to God, I'm quoting, "By force of events, you made me chaste. Chastity became a blessing, an inner necessity for me. It was you who did that, O God, you alone. I, alas, had no part in it. How good you have been. What sad and culpable relapses, you miraculously preserved me. The devil is too much the master of an unchaste soul to let truth enter it. You could not, O God, commit to my soul where the devil of unbridled passions rules supreme. But you wanted to come into my soul, O good shepherd. And so you yourself expelled your enemy from it. But the classic passage from the saints on the need for prayer to practice Christian purity is St. Augustine's historic passage in his own Confessions. He is here describing how he struggled with his passions and how he feared that by praying he might be cured. Speaking of the Lord, Augustine prayed, I quote, "In my great unworthiness, I have begged you for chastity, saying, grant me chastity and continence, but not yet. For I was afraid that you would hear my prayer too soon, and too soon you would heal me from the disease of lust, which I wanted satisfied rather than extinguished." Unquote, Augustine. St. Augustine knew that he could not be cured from the disease of lust except by prayer. Ah, what a rampant disease, what a widespread epidemic of lust in our beloved nation. But Augustine also knew that his prayer had to be sincere. He knew that God will give us the grace we ask for, provided we are willing to cooperate with the grace which he confers. I have a closing prayer to Our Lady. A prayer, I should say, that my fellow Jesuits have been saying for generations. Immaculate Virgin Mary, I confide my chastity to your maternal heart. I ask your help to guard my senses, especially my eyes. For an unchaste eye is a messenger of an unchaste heart. knowing my pride, I pray for that humility which invites the mercy of God. Knowing that I am human, I shall not be surprised at the urge of concupiscence, but trusting in your care, I rely on your protection and all the graces that I need from your divine Son. Amen. So far, our conference. A reminder, our next conference is a week from today, on December the 6th, on the subject of the Eucharist and chastity. May God bless you and help you to observe the most blessed Advent of your lives, which begins this coming Sunday.